hour. Let's get this 5 o'clock hour rolling by talking Red Sox as they get set to open a series at home against the Oakland A's tonight. We're joined on the phone by our friend Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich. What's going on?
Well, getting ready to play some home games. And we were saying earlier, a 3-3 road trip, not unexpected, but the way it went down perhaps wasn't what we envisioned.
Yeah, you know, you go to Chicago and play a pretty red-hot White Sox team, and outside of Jose Quintana out-dueling Stephen Wright, and a matchup of guys who have two of the three best ERAs in the American League, as we all expected coming into the year with those two. The Red Sox take the last two of that series, and then kind of, you know, fall asleep a little bit the first two at Yankee Stadium before rebounding last night behind Wright. You know, the story of, I'm sure you want to ask about Price on Saturday, but overall, you know, a pretty good road trip. They're still right there, a half game behind the Orioles in the American League East, playing about as well as anyone in the American League overall.
Now, I want to know if you were doing a fundraiser, perhaps for your school. You know how they have those dunk tanks. You got to throw the ball and knock a guy in. So you got two of them side by side. Whose can would be filled with the most money, Pablo Sandoval or Ron Culpa?
You know, I think if we're just talking this weekend, Culpa is probably on top after Friday night. Red Sox not particularly pleased, to put it politely, with his strike zone. But, you know, it's tough. Sandoval's just been racking up the dough for so long in terms of, in the analogy. He might be tough to top.
All right, well, let's talk pitching. Before we get to Price, though, Stephen Wright just continues to dazzle. And we've seen this before, but it's been, I think, back in Tim Wakefield's first year with the Red Sox when we've seen a knuckleballer go on this kind of a run.
Right. Like you mentioned, there is precedent for a guy kind of coming out of nowhere the way Wright has. You go back to Wakefield's career. He did it in 92 with the Pirates, where you know his first real exposure to the major league, becoming one of their best starters in wrapped the NLCS. In 95, after kind of losing it in Pittsburgh and getting released, signs on with the Red Sox. And I think he was 14-1 in the month, you know, through July of that season before he faded down the stretch. And even more recently, you go R.A. Dickey with the Mets was kind of this washed up, you know, mid-30s guy who started the season in the minor leagues in 2010, came on, was pitched really well for them that year, and then 2 years later wins the Cy Young. Those are probably high marks for high standards for Wright to reach. But you know, this is the Red Sox were intrigued by him when they traded for him 4 years ago because they've had the experience with knuckleball pitchers and they feel like they can foster a good environment for a knuckleballer to succeed because of the experience with Wakefield. And we've seen Wright just kind of come along steadily through the process. You know, every time he's pitched in the major leagues, he's pitched pretty well. This isn't a guy who gets lit up from time to time. When he started coming into the year, what they liked about him was, well, you could count him to go five or six innings, give up two or three runs, kind of what he did. And he's taken that clearly to the next level through his first seven starts here with the Red Sox this season. You know, he's pitched as many innings as David Price, and he's given up seven earned runs, and Price has given up 31 through the same amount of time. So it's been really impressive to watch. And they're, you know, well, this level of performance might not be sustainable. A 1.52 ERA, I think, is what he's sitting on. There's certainly reasonable to think that he could give you an ERA for the season that's between 3 and 3.5, which is certainly what the Red Sox wouldn't mind getting from a back end of the rotation starter.
So, Tim, this is a perfect transition spot. I'm a listener of the Super 2 Red Sox podcast. Can you lay out the math that you think it would take for David Price to finish the season with a better ERA than Stephen Wright?
So I was doing this morning, and it's really helpful that they have thrown the same number of innings. That makes it so much easier to do, I think. If Price pitches at a run better ERA than Wright the rest of the season, let's say Price pitches at a 3 and Wright at a 4, it would take 216 innings for him to catch up. You're not going to redo that in the course of a single season. If he pitches a run and a half better than him, you know, a 2.75 ERA to a 4.25, something like that, it would take, I think it was 144 innings, which is more realistic in the course of the season. You know, Price could get to 185 innings, no problem this year. I don't know if Wright will get that far. If we have to see him do that for a full season, but it just shows you just how big a gap there is between the two of them right now.
This is why we love you on the show, Tim, because not only we've learned in the past that you're more well-read than the average sports writer, but clearly better at math too.
Oh yeah. I was home recently, and I was looking through my old high school math notebook, and I could not remember. I had no idea what it meant. It took me forever to remember what a cosecant was.
Tim Breton of the Providence Journal with us here on Downtown. Now, what's the level of fan discontent? Is there any concern that the crowd starts throwing those David Price and Astro the Dog bobbleheads back on the field tomorrow night?
You know, I think it's still a little early on that. It's only been 7 starts, and I know that as tempting as it is to say, man, like, where would this team be if Price is pitching as well as he could be? No, they still won 4 of those games. It's
right.
Not like they're 0-7 in his starts or anything like that. So I think we're still a little away from people tossing anything on the field. The team's in first place. Teams in a half game out of first place as well, which helps. But that Thursday start for Price is, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyes on him, on that front foot and his hands, and whether he's making the mechanical adjustment he's talked about over the weekend, and whether that can build back the velocity that he hasn't had for the first 6 weeks of the season. It's certainly going to be an interesting start for him against the Astros.
Tim, I read your piece about Tommy Lane, and I really found it to be quite interesting. What did you learn about a guy who lives on the bubble and exists to face two hitters?
Well, yeah, Lane, is, I think, is one of the most fascinating guys in the Red Sox clubhouse. Very easy to talk to about things like this. And you know, he had dropped earlier in the season. He's like, oh, you know, I show up, you know, 5 or 6 hours before the game on the first game of the series, especially shows up a little earlier. Just watch video for hours of the same group of hitters over and over. And I talk to him about it in Atlanta. It's like you're just watching video of Nick Markakis and Freddie Freeman all day, and kind of prepping for that you know 5 pitches he has to throw in a base spot if it gets to that point. And, you know, it's been weird for him this season. We haven't seen him a lot in those spots the way we did last year because the bullpen is deeper. They haven't had to, you know, they haven't needed to go to him in like the 7th or 8th inning to get a tough lefty yet. But he's a guy who loves those spots. He came up as a starter originally and was basically washed up as a starter when they moved him to the bullpen in San Diego 4 years ago. And he loved that job, really reinvigorated him. And what I thought was interesting was he said, you know, my first thing is I come up with an approach of if it's 2nd and 3rd, 1 out, and I'm facing this guy and I need a strikeout, I'm going to lay out how I'm going to get that strikeout of this guy. And then I'm going to come up with a secondary plan if it's a different situation. I don't need the strikeout, I just need an out. And then it's another plan if it's a leadoff hitter in a 5-run game where first game of the series, I don't want to show him my plan for how I'm going to get him out later in the series in a bigger spot, so I'll pitch him differently then. And it was just, you know, we always talk about the cat and mouse game with pitchers. I hadn't heard it laid out quite like that before.
Tim Breton of the Providence Journal with us here on Downtown. We talked about this earlier in the show. What David Ortiz is doing, not just great for Red Sox fans, but really unprecedented for a guy his age. Did anybody see this coming? And there's no way he can keep this up, right?
I mean, you flash back to the first week of June last year, and David Ortiz is sitting on 6 home runs. He can't hit lefties. His average is under 250. And there was, you know, reasonable discussion of whether this was going to be it for him. If this was the year, he should call it quit. And I think it's since June 11th of last year, a stretch of 123 games, he's hit 40 home runs. You know, that's a pace of 54 for a whole season, which I think would, 53 or 54, is right on his career high from 2006, 10 years ago. It's incredible to see how locked in he's been for such an extended period of time. You know, like we talked about with Wright and maybe with Rick Porcello, it's not just the start of the season where he's looked this way. It's dating back to a big chunk of last year, too. And that's why you think maybe he can keep it up for a while. You know, there's sure to be slumps along the way, and he's not going to be have an OPS of 1,000 all season. But he's still going to be their best hitter in the middle of the order in his final season. And he keeps reiterating that he is very content with his decision to retire, much to the chagrin of Red Sox fans. But that's something that, you know, outside really of Barry Bonds, we haven't seen a 40-year-old this central to his team's offense in a long time.
Don't mention those two guys in the same sentence, Tim. Come on. Hey, I wanted to ask you before we let you go, talk last week about Blake Swihart, the work he's getting in left field. What does that mean for his future? Does that make him a more attractive trade chip, or do the Red Sox envision him taking on that role at some point and allowing Brock Holt to go back to be that super utility guy?
You know, it's a really interesting dilemma they're running up against with Swihart, because I was down in Pawtucket this past week and I talked to him and Kevin Bowles And the first word out is that he's pretty good at it in left field. He's making the transition there even quicker than they thought, and they thought he could handle it pretty seamlessly based off his athleticism. You know, he's a guy in high school was playing the infield and outfield more than he was catching for his team. So he was an athlete to start with, so it's not that difficult for him to make that transition. What's interesting is you try to weigh the balance here. You know, Swihart's most value as a single player would be behind the plate because the offense that he can bring you as a catcher is so premium for that position. You know, it's so hard to find a catcher who can hit the way he does that you're tempted to keep him there long term. But then you look at this specific Red Sox team and you say, well, they don't necessarily need that much offense out of the catcher position, and you've got a guy in Christian Vasquez who gives you a little bit more defensive value there. And maybe if Swihart can handle left field, you've got a guy in Holt who has historically worn down a little bit as the season's gone on. And maybe they look at Swihart as a guy who, you know, later in the season, they could call up and be another guy to have in left field, not every day, but some days of the week. Some day, you know, keep him catching and left field. That would be an interesting kind of split for a guy. We don't see that very often in the majors where a guy catches and plays another position part-time. But that's maybe how he's most valuable to this Red Sox team. And then you look at whether, you know, what his trade value would be. I still think it's probably, you know, if another team wants to trade for him, it's probably with the idea of him being a catcher. But if Vasquez shows that he can be not just a good defensive catcher, but has some value with the bat too, and we've seen him hit a little bit better this past week than he did the first couple of weeks with the team, then maybe you're more open to moving Swihart for a piece that fits your roster a little more perfectly.
Tim Britton talking Red Sox with us here on Downtown. Tim, as always, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Oh, anytime. Looking forward to it.